So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask someone a question. Why did you find the Taoist reading hard?
Because it's not just giving up worldly goods, it's sort of giving up the virtues.
Because it's not just giving up worldly goods, it's giving up the virtues. It's true.
The mental component.
Yeah, it's
maybe it's just being present.
Well, you know, in a place where everybody treats each other well, you don't need a concept for treating each other well. I think there's a, you know, the Taoist point of view is by the time you get down to making rules, you've already lost. You know, by the time you have to make a just law, things have gotten so chaotic that you actually have to do something that extreme. Which, you know, Saint Francis had the same point of view. There's something in the Taoist thing for today that says, get rid of learning and problems will vanish. You know, this was one aspect of St. Francis's mission was he didn't want scholar monks. He didn't want people who, he didn't want theologians. He wanted people who experienced reality and could preach about it. And, you know, it didn't last very long. Part of that was really this same theme of humility, because learning was one of the few ways that you could raise your status, your social status in that time. And people would join monasteries in order to become educated, in order to increase their social status. And you know, I don't think St. Francis was, you know, he wasn't championing ignorance. You know, he was trying to reform one of the ways that people expressed ambition in his society. It's not easy to define humility. You know, there's external humility, and there's internal humility. There's external humility, like, you know, if you talk about, in the same way that you can talk about a humble dwelling, you could talk about a humble person. It's an outer aspect. You know, you walk into a humble dwelling and it could be very, beautiful. It could be very elegant, but it's simple. And there's not more there than is necessary. And we know people like this who are, in an external sense, have a humble aspect. There's not more presence or personality there than needs to be there. There's not more opinion than needs to be there. It's relaxing to be around people like that, actually. And there's an internal aspect of humility that's can be related to the external aspect, but can be completely separate. It's, you know, someone can live outwardly a very humble life and be completely convinced of their superiority as a person because they are leading such a humble life. This sort of rigmarole is not uncommon in our with these amazing minds we have. It's much like the problem of spiritual poverty. You know, spiritual poverty has, as we've talked about, has very little to do with the amount of your possessions. There's one of my favorite stories about that, which I'm sure I've told before. There was a man who was the head of a Sufi order back in the Middle Ages in Central Asia. And he was a good businessman, and he worked for the order and made it very rich. And their teke, their monastery, was renowned for its hospitality. It was like the palace of a king, and people would visit from far and wide. And this man died and left the order to his son, who was his successor. And his successor, his son, gave away all the money. And many of the dervishes were very disturbed, you know, and said, "Why have you given away all of our resources?" And he said, "Well, my father was such a man that in the midst of riches, he could be trusted to rely on nothing but God and to regard nothing as his own. And I'm just not like that." So, yeah, there's a difference between internal and external humility. And as was brought up in the Christian, there's a difference between internal and external religious practice in terms of humility. The illustration of the person praying, "Thank God I'm not like that tax collector over there." Everyone knows this story, I think, this old Hasidic joke of the rabbi who's praying to God and saying, "You are magnificent. I am nothing before you. I am nothing." And one of the other parishioners gets very excited and prays along with him and saying, "We are nothing. We bow down before you. In your presence, we disappear." And this beggar who is sitting on the doorstep gets very enthused and starts praying with them and saying, "I'm nothing. I'm nothing." And the rabbi nudges the first parishioner and says, "Look who thinks he's nothing." So, you know, there's a Talmudic story about that you're supposed to keep two scriptures with you, one in each pocket. This is a metaphor, of course. Two scriptures. They're both quotes from the book of Genesis. And one says, "I am only dust." And the other one says, "This universe was created for me." And, you know, in the Talmud it said this, the whole art of life is to know which scripture to pull out when. And this is the exact same teaching is in the Sufi tradition. Suleiman Dede, who brought the Mevlevi tradition to the West, once said, "You need to know how to be a dervish." A dervish meaning a poor, wandering mendicant. You have to know how to be a dervish, and you have to know how to be a king. And the key is to know which one to be in the moment. And this is, this can be difficult. This can be difficult because, you know, what do we need to actually do this? To actually know which one to pick in the moment? How do we actually do this? And I think we need two things. We need to be first, we need to be grounded in an experience of life that is beyond our personality. We have to know what that is. We can't recognize it if we don't know what it is, and if we don't, to some great extent, live there. Live in a place that is beyond ourselves, because otherwise we're just stuck in ourselves, which is, again, just like being in your head, not the worst place to be, but you don't want to be trapped there. And if you aren't grounded in an experience beyond yourself, then you're going to make this choice of which pocket to pull up. Your ego is going to make that choice. You're going to make it on the basis of your personality. If your experience of life is grounded in something beyond that, then you have a possibility of making the right choice. And I think the other thing that is needed besides that is a kind of searing honesty in looking at who you are in the moment. And, you know, that's not a comfortable thing necessarily. It's I've heard a lot of people talking about humility, and, you know, even quite recently, and something I noticed was that one thing that people like to say, one of the first things that comes up, it seems, is this sense of humility is great, but you gotta be careful and not demean yourself or let anybody else demean you. You know, you have to have a certain kind of self-esteem, and you know that needs to balance the humility. And that's hard to argue with, but you know, it came up so frequently when I was hearing people talk that it made me think, who's defending here? You know, what's the why is the first reaction to be, you know, this sense of humility? That's dangerous, because, you know, I put myself down too much already, you know, and other people put me down. I let other people put me down, and that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, that's what we're taught. You know, St. Francis had a very different point of view. It's funny, we're talking a lot about St. Francis, but, you know, we did a whole year looking at the teachings and the presence of St. Francis, and I think it really influenced our outlook in a lot of ways. But Francis would... Francis valued experiences where he was humiliated. You know, this was a positive orientation for him. And in a sense, humility is the willingness to be humiliated. It's the willingness to feel what that feels like. You know, he actually, Francis, used to, if I'm getting this right, he used to actually have monks, other monks, stand over him and put their foot on his neck, you know, as it was a kind of, you know, a kind of yoga of humiliation. And so that he could get in touch with that. And, you know, I don't believe this is because Francis lacked self-esteem. You know, this is a guy who created an order of religious practice that went from nothing to thousands and thousands of people within a very few years. You know, this is a guy who danced in front of the Pope. You know, he He crashed the, he went to the Middle East, to Egypt, and crashed the Sultan's court to preach to him by just like running at the Sultan's camp and screaming, "Sultan, Sultan," you know, and they beat the crap out of him. And he kept yelling, "Sultan, Sultan," until they took him in to see the Sultan. You know, he was not a... He was not a retiring kind of guy. You know, I mean, he if you look at his behavior, he's almost an exhibitionist. He's so consumed with the message that he has to give. So... You know, we want humility to be comfortable, and it's not necessarily. You know, it's we want it to be tame. You know, we want it to fit within our ego structure so that we can, like, work with it. But in a sense, if we don't experience the pain of humiliation, either in ourselves or in our relationships with other people, we're not really touching, we're not able to really touch the foundation of humility. You know, if we don't rub up against the edges within ourselves, we're not really going anywhere. And I don't want to say that the experience of humility is an experience of pain, because the experience of humility can be an experience of incredible relief and clarity and simplicity and bliss. But usually we don't have a problem with that stuff. And the way that we get there is usually through pain. You know, not pain that's inflicted on us by other people, pain that we voluntarily choose to experience to get beyond our limitations. And we have to be very careful about this, because you know, our ego has these experiences too. And at every stage of the game, it's very easy for our ego to slip in and start supervising the process. This is where, you know, this sense of pain and orienting towards it rather than away from it can be really, really helpful in our progress, because it brings this process by which the ego tries to supervise our religious development, our spiritual development, into high relief, because the ego doesn't want to go there. Because the ego is what's experiencing the pain. So, this is sounding kind of harsh to myself as I'm saying this, but I don't think of it that way. There's a really positive aspect to this, which is that we can use any experience that we are having as a way to move forward. We don't have to be crushed by life in a bad way. We can actually use that experience of being crushed by life, which is a universal experience. You know, everybody is crushed by life. We can use that experience, however that's manifesting, to move forward in an undefended way. We can let God or the goddess, actually the goddess is a better picture, have her foot on our neck. We can look at life from that perspective. And that can be a place of bliss. You know, we've all seen the pictures of Shiva and Shakti, or Shiva and Kali, different visual images, but this amazing, powerful, universal creature standing on a dead man. Yeah? Well, the dead man is us. And it doesn't matter how we get there. If we go through pain, if we fall out of a tree and wake up that way, if we, if we devote ourselves to religious practice, if we devote ourselves to hedonistic excess, it doesn't matter how we get there. And the way there is going to be different for every single one of us. Would you like to share something?
Thank you. This is wonderful. One of the things we'll do next is invite you all to share. But I had just a couple of thoughts about St. Francis. And it was a lovely year where we worked with the teachings and wisdom and love of St. Francis. And in your reading about the truth, you know, it's talking about there's a place for pride, there's a place for humility, and that fits into knowing when to do what, when to experience what. But you want to be authentic and really feel what it is you're feeling. And if you're feeling your pain, feel your pain. If you're feeling proud, it's okay, feel it. In the story of St. Francis, he, as a young man, had a very idealized concept of himself that he wanted to fulfill. And he wanted to be a soldier, and he was very popular, apparently. And life circumstances affected him. And through that process, clearly he changed and learned and grew. And this crushing aspect happened in his life. He was like about a year he spent in prison. There's a number of stories about this that are fascinating. In prison and ill. And he needed to recover. But in the process of this, we remind ourselves we have to be awake. And if we're not awake, it's going to be harder. So in every moment, we need to go into the depth of what we're feeling, in the depth of the present, and open ourselves. Because there's wisdom coming through. There's wisdom available to us with a benevolent sense of love from the universe. And whatever we're going through, we can open up for that. And this is wonderful teaching. Thank you for going here today. Talking about humility. There are many occasions that we are humbled. We are humiliated. And somehow there's like a essence in that is extremely divine. If you can open up, be awake, and expand your own ability to love what's happening, love yourself, love everything around you. We know it's not easy, but we know this is part of our work and part of our community's work for us to be spiritually open, to be able to perceive possibilities. And so I'm inviting all of you, when you feel like sharing something, just unmute yourself and share with us.